Welcome to the Round 10 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined this week by FB Donkey.
Count the Bombers, were you there on Saturday night, mate? It was a pretty good game.
Yeah, you texted me and you got zero back.
Nothing.
It was pretty painful, to be honest. And my Supercoach team is awful as well. So I'm going to be relying on you to pick the mood up a little bit. And for both my Supercoach and my football club to turn things around this weekend. 10 rounds in and my ranking is looking pretty dire. I'm in uncharted territory, still falling backwards at the moment, Mark.
So you are more than triple my ranking now?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
And that doesn't really do it justice, you know. You need to say, like, you're 10,000 spots behind. Like, it's gotten to the point where the worst ways to describe that to make me feel just shit ass about myself. So thanks, Mark. Appreciate that.
All right. All right. Well, at least your team on the weekend. Oh, hang on.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Now, I'm going to miss you next week when you take a little break, Mark. All right. How do you go? Why don't you kick us off with some positivity, mate?
I guess I did okay. So 22.57. Jumped up to 3,410, which is a bit of a meh sort of rank. And I guess I'm just hoping that I have a good period over the buys. I sort of haven't had any really bad week in the last few weeks, but I also haven't had the good weeks. Last few weeks have been really interesting, I think, for Supercoach, because the scores have differentiated pretty largely, and you're either sort of on the right side or the wrong side of that. So I made two trades last week, and it cost me 90 points. So if I hadn't made those trades, I probably would be sitting a fair bit higher. But reasonably confident with my team. I'm down to four rookies on field at the moment.
Very nice, Mark. I traded out two non-playing players in Norton and English, and I brought in Simpson and went in early on Ed Phillips. So we'll discuss that. That's a big topic for discussion this week, with the downgrade targets looking pretty skinny and a few other people in my boat who did the same thing last week. So I can't complain that my trades drag me backward, but I can complain about my trade in target in Simpson only scoring 72 in his first round, together with his compatriot Heath Shaw in my back line with a 54. They sure packed a real punch as my premium defenders on the weekend. It was a bit disappointing. I scored 21.
No wonder your team's going so crap.
Yeah.
You got Heath Shaw in there, mate.
Yeah.
I did try to warn you.
I don't have McRae as well, which I've been pumping him up on the podcast for quite a few weeks now, and I can see that's positively influenced the community. Unfortunately, I did not get on the bandwagon because I only had one midfield target left, and that was for Dangerfield. Really regretting that right now.
Just to make you feel better, mate, a couple of weeks ago, I was looking at maybe bringing in Matty Crouch. And I listened to the podcast and thought, nope, McRae's a great, much better to go. And he's had two massive scores since I brought him in. And Crouch only played one of those two games and then was out with a hamstring. So it definitely helped my team out.
Even though I know you said that with a a little bit of a snide undertone there, I actually do feel better about that, because as a whole, the community seems to still be chugging along. In terms of our leagues, we sort of moved up to occupy three of the top five leagues overall right now, which is awesome. And there's still quite a few people in our group right up there in contention for the overall prize. Mark's Tankosaurus retook the lead of our Supercoach Coach group with his score of 24.06, moving into 14th. So even though I'm bummed about my score, which was 21.41 for the week, and I've now slid back into the 14,000 mark, I can take some solace in the fact that the advice that I'm giving out doesn't seem to be too bad. I just seem to be executing on my own advice absolutely awfully, which you'd think would be a struggle to do, but I've got there. I've got there.
Well, and I've finally learned what to do, because I'm pretty bad at executing on my own advice too sometimes, mate. So all I'm doing now is just copying what you tell me to do, and you're not doing it, and I'm flourishing. It's great.
Bugger. Bugger. All right, let's get on to some questions this week, Mark. We'll focus predominantly on the rookie situation this week. As I mentioned at the top of the show, trade-in options are limited. Then we will look at the trade-in candidates for the week. A lot of people looking to finish their team, so tossing up between points of difference, people that have dropped in price, and going for, you know, the out-and-out top six options. So a few angles to consider there. And refreshingly, we didn't get a lot of questions about what do we do with Petrarca and Billings and stuff like that. So I think most people are pretty over those sorts of questions. And if you've stuck on for this long, I guess you know the path to a brighter future is through side-swapping around the buy. So we'll stay on off those depressing trade out conversations. With that said, let's jump in, Mark, with the rookie questions for the week. This first question here is from Michael Nan on Facebook. Is it time to trade Tim Kelly to Dangerfield, or is it better to focus on upgrading Caulfield and Finlayson? Yeah. So a lot of people facing this week. 48 with Kelly is really quite exceptionally poor timing. His break even goes up to 120. His price is currently sitting at 430. So I think a lot of us were hoping, you know, this might be one of the rare rookies that get up into that 500K range. This definitely puts a little dint in it. And the buys are coming up as well. So once you factor the fact that this will be in his price movements post round 10 and post round 11. He then only gets round 12 and round 13 to increase in price without the 48 in his price movements before his round 14 buy. So that does sort of change the equation a little bit. If you wait through his 48, that you won't really get a lot of time for him to potentially push past this 430 mark without the 48 hampering him. And a lot of us are still dealing with two, three backline rookies on field. And with the backline rookies flagging, it is a pretty tough question. And I think Dangerfield bottoming out basically this week just sort of further compounds that query. The first thing I did when I came out of lockout was trade Kelly for Dangerfield, Mark. And then straight away I went, is that actually right? Like, this bloke's averaging 100. We have two good opponents coming up this week. But then again, so does Dangerfield. It is a pretty tough one.
For me, I don't see it like that at all. I see it as all the stars aligning. My plan was all, like, for the last probably month has been Kelly to Danger this week. So the first thing I did after lockout was I did Norton down to Phillips and Kelly to Danger. That leaves me with 6,000 in the bank. I just see it as all the stars aligning. Like, I can understand the question. Like, Kelly is scoring way more than Finlayson, so getting him to a premium has less advantage in the short term. But when I'm thinking about what I want my team to look like for the run home post buys, I want Danger in my team. And Danger's bottoming out and Kelly's at the sort of top of what his mark's likely to be. So that just seems a really, really obvious move for me. I can understand the opposing argument that you may want to get extra premium points on the field over the next few weeks, but I've got a plan for my team. And part of that is that, Kelly should get up to Danger. So, I'm looking to do that this week.
Yeah, I don't know. Kelly's averaging 100 at skilled. Dangerfield is only averaging 115 for the season. Even after his 48, Kelly's average is still 94. Whereas in the back line, these rookies are starting to really flag. Finlayson's delivered another 62. Murray, another score in the 50s. So at the moment, if you exclude the first four rounds, these blokes are averaging much closer to 60 than they are to, you know, the 80 that their current average is reflecting.
And when you brought in Simpson on the weekend, how did he go?
He scored a 72, but
and if you brought in Sicily, how did he go?
A 77. And sure, if you brought in Heath Shaw, how did he go? Yeah, sure, the variance is higher, but that's natural with backline and forward line premiums. But more to the point, like, Simpson is still averaging 103 for the season. Like, if you can get a bloke to average 95 or even 90, which shouldn't be too hard. Yes, they can have the poor game here or there. That represents a 30-point increase from, or, you know, 25-point increase if Finlayson and Murray only manage, you know, 65s and middle around there because they've sort of hit a bit of a wall. And
I think you said that you're looking at, like, a 25 improvement on average from the defender. Kelly and Danger have, like, 20 points different in their average. Danger sort of been warming up into the season. I think he has a low score of about 94, which is actually really good for midfielders this year. Danger, to me, looks like a player that I definitely want to get into my team. So it's just got to be facilitated at some point. And Danger's the sort of guy that could go away and Kelly could go down. So because of the prices and break-evens, Danger could easily be 650-odd in the next couple of weeks and Kelly could be 350-odd. And then you're looking at trying to find 300,000 to make that trade, which is just not going to happen.
That's fair. Look, I was just playing devil's advocate. As I said, that was the first thing that I looked at when I came out of lockout. And I think it does make sense.
Yeah, and I guess one of the other things is that, so that's what's definitely going to be filled for by Danger for my team. I guess that you could maybe say some people might put Rockcliffe in instead of Danger, which is maybe something that you should personally consider just because you're looking at like going a different approach. But if I'm going to be carrying a bunch of round 14 premiums, which I am with Fife, Martin, Parker, I'd rather get Danger in as early as possible because it is going to cost me in round 14. So I just want to get as much premium benefit in that position as I can for as long as possible.
Yeah. The other consideration for why you should trade into Dangerfield earlier rather than later is, unfortunately, with round 14 buy premiums, you don't get to trade to them buy free. You know, if he was a round 13 buy play, you might say, well, I could wait till I upgrade to Dangerfield buy free and I only missed out on 3 weeks of scoring. But with Dangerfield, no matter when you bring him in, you're pretty much going to cop the buy anyway. So that's another reason to move on Dangerfield earlier rather than waiting. All right, we'll move on to the next question. This one's from Jeff Lane from Facebook. If I trade Holman, I can get Dangerfield this week, or should I be holding somebody like Holman for buy coverage and to allow that 122 that's fresh in his prize movement to mature a little bit? And if he manages scores in the 70s across the next 2 rounds post-buy, he's scheduled to go up about 50K. So he should be at about 350, 360 if you just hold on for him through the buys.
Look, I think that holding is probably the strategy now. That 122 just makes it a bit tricky because I think that a lot of people would have either traded him out or been looking to trade him out this week, but that score is so big that there is some more price movement there, plus he's already had his buy. So I think that flexibility means Holman is probably someone, if you can, you'd keep. If you have to, if you need the money somewhere and you need to be getting a premium into that spot, I guess you trade. But if you can keep him, I'd be hopefully looking to do that. Have you still got Holman?
Yeah, I got a bit fortunate with Norton and English being sort of injured. That's why they made their way out of my team. Otherwise, Holman was the next off the rank. So it was pure luck there. Dangerfield, though, I'd still look to bring him in. Even if you can't trade Holman out, just look to trade somebody else out instead. Maybe a Kelly, as we mentioned. 430 is a pretty darn good price. But yeah, I'd try and keep Holman as well. Next question from Grant Robson, one of our patrons. He is a little bit lost about downgrade options this week because, like quite a few, he went early on Phillips last week. What to do this week? We've got quite a few questions around that.
Yeah.
I did the same thing. Mark, you're in a situation where you've locked your trades in because Phillips and Danger seem like obvious picks this week. So for anyone in a similar situation to yourself, it's actually a pretty easy trade week. So we did get less questions come through this week, I did notice. But for the rest of us suckers who went early on Phillips, and I think Phillips seems the obvious option this week, the only other two rookies on the bubble are Isaac Cumming and Tom McCartan. So Cumming plays for GWS, available in the back line, and Tom McCartan plays for Sydney and is available in the forward line. They're both around the 120K mark. And job security for both is a little bit scratchy. Isaac Cumming is a rebounding defender and could slot into a Nathan Wilson type role. And Tom McCartan is a tall forward. In terms of job security across the buys, I am leaning toward Cumming. But then again, Buddy did come back last week and McCartan stayed in the team.
Yeah.
It's pretty tough to call job security at this stage of the year, Mark. It's a bit of speculation.
And look, there's a fair bit of luck involved as well. And you just sort of, I don't know how to get it right. I guess you just pick whichever position works the best for your team and just hope for the, cross your fingers and hope for the best. It's hard to be much more precise than that, unfortunately, because during the buys, you really, really need them to play. And you just never sure whether they're going to. So out of the two that you mentioned, Cumming, he looked pretty good in the first game, but he just was nowhere to be seen in that second game. And yet
And that does mirror his junior career mark. He had the potential to get 25-plus posies in a few games and really rack up huge amounts of points. And then in others, he'd just go missing. So very outside player, I think pick in the 20s. So he's very talented, obviously done well to break into the side. But like you said, Mark, hot and cold, hot and cold.
Whereas Tom McCartan, he was talked up a lot in the preseason that they were really, really surprised with the player that they'd got. And he did struggle a bit as a junior, I think with injuries, and then only really came on pretty hard late. So he does have a reasonable profile that he could keep a spot in that Sydney team for a while. Look, I think that he's probably a little bit more likely to work out, but he's a forward, Cummings a defender. You're gambling a lot on both of them, and I guess you just downgrade in the position that you need to. Team sheets this week might actually have a big say on that. And have we got the one game rookies on the bubble? Sorry, on the run sheet?
Yeah.
So I guess that the situation that you may have backed yourself into, which is really, really tricky, is that once you go once on a one gamer, you can get into like a pattern where you have to go again.
Yeah, you can get lucky and Cumming might be a way out, McCartan can be a way out, but certainly that's the risk you do accept when you go early, Mark. So do you keep that chain going heading into the buys, where job security is definitely much more important than scoring potential at the moment? It's definitely a tough call. I think the good thing in McCartan's favour are the talls that out for Sydney will stay out for a little while, right? Like, the ruck situation is obviously fairly depleted. So, you know, they don't have a spare ruck to chuck down as a tall. And Sam Reed's still out with his quad injury for another month and a half, 2 months. So if he managed to stay in the team last week with Franklin coming back, that's fairly positive signs. Whereas Cumming, even though there's probably not a direct replacement returning from injury, they do have a lot of best 22 players who are currently missing from the side. Yeah. In their leadership team, De Boer, you've got Delidio to come back, Green to come back, Kelly to come back. So there's a lot more competition. But in terms of like for like, if they've decided Cumming is sort of a new rookie to blood and to give a chance in that halfback slot, and if he stays in this week, the signs are potentially promising there as well. Let's talk about some of these one-game rookies, Mark, and maybe you might like, or our listeners might like them a little bit better than Cumming and McCartan. The first guy that we got a question about is Tim Smith. Andrew Black from Facebook has asked about him and his job security. He scored 91 on the weekend, which obviously would have caught a fair few eyes. Yeah. And on top of that, this is actually his second year on a list. He was recruited to Melbourne last year. Notably, he's a mature age player in his mid to late 20s. I think 25, 26, 27. 27 or... Okay, yep. And obviously that's paid dividends in week one. I don't think he's known as a high scorer, so it definitely seems like a good week to have, I mean, if you did somehow go 2 weeks early on Smith, they did smash their opponents by 100 points on the weekend, did Melbourne. So something to keep in mind, probably won't keep happening week after week. Tim Smith, Mark, know much about him, tempted by him?
Would definitely want to see one more from him. I do remember him last year. He scored a 29 and a 22, and I think, I don't know which one it was, it must have been the 22 where he scored all of those points in like the first 5 minutes of the game and then got a bad injury and was out for the rest of the year. So he did look like he had some scoring potential in that week. I think Melbourne's injury list is reasonably small at the moment. A lot of their players have already come back, so it's interesting that he is still getting games in that situation. I think his scoring potential is definitely inflated by playing Carlton on the weekend. One thing to look out for is that you've got Tim Smith and Jordan Ridley coming through next week, and there's a good chance that you may want both of those, so it might actually work out in your favour that, like, you can grab one this week and do an upgrade and then grab another next week and do an upgrade, and it might all work out roses. For those that are grabbing Phillips this week, just keep in mind, probably a good idea to spend that money because you may potentially want to do two downgrades next week.
Yeah, my only call out with Smith would be that Sam Wiedemann did play 4 weeks in the team from rounds 5 to 8 before copping a calf injury and missing round 9 against Carlton. He's only listed as 1 week on the injury list, and then he'll be back. And he's a young key tall. So if it's between Wiedemann and Tim Smith, and Wiedemann actually had the spot in the team sewn up before the injury, that might mean that Smith could make way during the bye period. So that'd be the only call out from a job security point of view.
Yeah, potentially.
JT or at 5 Jester did ask about Dylan Clark. Big raps, great VFL form.
So he's Ryan Clark's little brother, and he came in with huge junior numbers and has been racking up massive numbers in the VFL this year, just to the point where we couldn't knock him back. Like, we couldn't just hold him back anymore. His tackle numbers were huge, his possession numbers were huge. And so he'd be 19 or 20, and very, very quiet on his first day, but in his first game against the Cats, but did get a bit more of the ball in the last quarter. Seems like the sort of guy you'd want to give another shot and could get a decent run. And I guess that he could come into calculations next week as well. So that just adds another player to that mix.
Looks quite sort of thick through the body, so doesn't look necessarily like a second year player, and definitely helps because he seems like a little bit more of an inside player, and his VFL form last year indicates that sort of kicking efficiency might be a little bit of an issue. He only went at under 50%, I think
he ended up going at we picked him up in the 60s in the draft, and that was just because of his kicking efficiency. So yeah, he knows his limitations, but the other parts of his game are actually very, very good.
Yeah, and we know how important tackle numbers are for rookies, and Nick Coleman's a great example of that. So Dylan Clark could certainly work out. And he's a mid-forward swingman as well, which certainly plays into his favour in terms of trading flexibility. So Jordan Ridley, Mark, you already mentioned him. He scored 76 points on debut. He's quite a talented kid, picked 22 a couple of years ago, and looks like he's very, very sharp with his kicking. So the disposals that he does get, he's going to rack up a fair few Supercoach points from them, but will be reliant on his teammates giving him some opportunity. He's very poor in the contested possession numbers. Thoughts on Ridley, Mark? You seem confident enough to potentially suggest I might be able to go a week early on him.
Yeah, of Tim Smith, Clark and Ridley, I would be taking Ridley for sure this week. My only reservation on him is that Hurley wasn't in the team, and I guess he was playing the Hurley role. Like, he was the distributor coming out of the back line. Players would take a mark and then just handball to him when he was standing 2 meters away, and he'd kick it out of there. So his kicking's pretty good. It wasn't like amazing the other night, and I guess the Cats' pressure wasn't brilliant either, but he just seems super, super composed. I think he's the sort of player that we've actually held back a little bit. He probably could have debuted last season at some point, at the end of last year. Had a couple of injuries last year, but was really ready to debut at the end of the year. And then this year has just been knocking on the door for a while. So I think, yeah, super ready. And my call is that I don't think he'll be going back to the VFL.
Any concerns that when you play that outside that he might fall into, you know, that Riley Bonner trap a little bit?
Potentially, yeah. And look, I'm not expecting him to have 25 touches every week. The game played into his hands a little bit. But if he could average 55-60, that's still a pretty good result at this stage if you can get some good job security.
Is Myers a concern for Dylan Clark's job security?
I think that they do play a really similar role. It'd be interesting to see what happens at selection this week, because we went youth or more youth against the Cats and it worked. We also rested Kobe Much, so what happens with him? It'd be really good if the Bombers could just keep playing the young guys, but then there's some older players with reputations that are going to want their spots. So, to be completely honest, it's really hard to see what Westfold is going to do here and to predict it. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Now, there's a couple of other blokes who played their first game on the weekend, but they're key position talls and very young ones at that. So Mitchell Lewis for Hawthorn and Pat Kerr for Carlton. If you're going to go early on a key position player, Melbourne's Tim Smith would be the bloke rather than these two. And if you're going to go early on a kid, probably Ridley and Clark play better positions than Lewis and Kerr do. So I probably wouldn't go early on those two. Now, Mark, just to wrap up this section, if you already had Phillips, like myself, and your choices were between Cumming, McCartan, Smith, Clark, and Ridley, where would you go?
Look, I think that McCartan and Ridley are the two that probably interest me the most out of that bunch. I think Phillips is definitely the way to go this week, but if it was me and I had already got Phillips last week, then I would be picking up Ridley personally.
Good to hear that from an Essendon supporter, at least. You hopefully should have a bit more of that inside knowledge. Yeah, I wouldn't probably go early on Smith and Clark. I'd be more wary of than Ridley. So it'd be between Ridley, Cumming, and McCartan for me. Yeah, I don't know how keen I am on McCartan necessarily, so it'd probably be between Cumming and Ridley for me. I think team shapes will dictate a lot of this, Mark.
Yes.
All right, let's move on to some mid-prices and some premiums now. Before we get into the trade-ins, just a quick question about a bloke that's been slightly underperforming after starting off the season in red-hot form, and that bloke is Stephen Cornelio. He started at 450K and at one stage was averaging about 120 for the first five rounds or so.
He was like a legitimate captain's option early on in the season.
Yep. And then his last four rounds, 93, 64, 189. His average has slid to 106, which is still not too bad for his 450K price tag. We got a question from, actually, we got quite a few questions about him. One of them was from Cedric Houlihan on Twitter, who asked whether or not now's the time to trade out Cornelio. For anyone actually considering that, though, his price tag surely has to deter you a little bit. He's now only priced at 477 and has undone a fair bit of the good work to climb up to about the 550 mark.
This is a trading game, mate, and the idea is that you're trying to make money out of each position. It's an investment game, and you don't sell low like that. It's just... He's not doing badly, and he's not Billings. He's not doing badly enough that you'd be trading him out. He's had a few quiet weeks. The Giants have had a few quiet weeks, so you just hope he turns it around.
I like that analogy, Mark. I agree with that point of view as well, and that takes us actually very nicely to our trade-in targets because our two headliners are Jake Lloyd and Jack Darling, who are both fresh off 170-plus scores. And so you're just talking about not selling low. Similarly, not buying high can be a good advice. I mean, sometimes you need to commit when it's, you know, a McRae type where undeniable, but certainly when they're spiking one big game, sometimes it can be a bit of a trap. So let's get into this first question here from Chris Todd from Facebook. Should we jump on Jake Lloyd this week before he pushes past 550K or wait to pick up a cheaper primo like Simpson, who's only at 487 and is falling? Hurley, who had a poor game and then was out injured, he'll fall too. Mark, thoughts on Lloyd? Is he a one-hit wonder, or is this a pattern? He also scored, I think, 130 the week before. We do know that Dan Hanabry and sort of midfielders being out certainly helps Lloyd. He gets much more midfield time and scores a lot better when that happens. He's obviously comfortably sitting in the top six defenders now. But do note that before that 130 and 173, his previous six scores before that, he didn't break the 94 mark.
Yeah, just had that one game in round one, I think it was. It was pretty good. Look, and this is part of exactly what we were talking about before, that last week was the time to get him, or the week before was the time to get him. He's over 500,000 now, and maybe he's playing Brisbane this week, and Brisbane do give a lot of points to the outside players, so he may have one more big week in him. I don't know. Like, you got to think about whether the player that you want in your team for the rest of the season, and is he going to average more than a Simpson per dollar from here? My answer would be I don't think that he will, but 500,000 is also not a terrible amount to be playing for someone that you think is going to be sort of top four, five, six defenders. His price is not insane. It's still a bit of a line ball call. He's not really on my radar this week, though.
Yeah, no, he's definitely not on mine. He was averaging 95 before this round, 90 before his 130. 130 and 173 can really do a lot to lift your average. Unfortunately, you missed the 173, so it's not going to factor into his average while he's in your team if you're in that situation. So I'm not massive on him either. And Simpson and Hurley, I'd still call top six defenders. So if they're going to be cheaper than Lloyd, it seems like a easy win to them. Now, the next question here is from Alexander Hua, one of our patrons. He's asking about Jack Darling, who's in a fairly similar scenario. Darling's actually stood up quite a bit this entire season so far in Josh Kennedy's absence, and even while Kennedy's been back. So almost seems to have taken on that number one forward role and hasn't relinquished it. And I think the Eagles midfielders are actually starting to kick to him a bit more than Kennedy at the moment. He's had one poor score under 42. Yeah, his next two poorest are 89 and 90. Every score outside of those three games are above 110. 112, 120, 112, 132, 125, and then 181. Massive numbers, Mark. Massive.
Massive. Yeah, no. And look, he's had this potential since he entered the AFL. We've just never quite seen him live up to it yet. So it's great to see him doing it. Personally, again, I think it's the same advice, really. Like, it's a trading game, it's an investment game, and you hope that he puts in another 40-odd, and then you wait for him to come down and you pick him up then. Like, I don't see paying, what is he now, 540-odd for Darling to be a great investment. He is playing awesome, and if you're having your team already, well done.
Yep, agree with that. Kennedy, you'd think, would only continue to steal more and more points as his fitness builds, and he tries to tussle that number one target mantle off Darling. He was at 500K last week, and the bloke averaging, potentially 100 from that price point is pretty good. But he's actually not even 540 mark, he's 560 now. So that's crazy money to be paying for a key position forward, I reckon.
You need him to average 110 from here for that to be a good pick.
Yeah. Yeah. Even with somebody like Buddy, we like picking Buddy at 450. So yeah, the potential for him to get a couple 40s is still there, and would presents too much risk to that price point. Now, we'll move on to a question here from Lee Moss on Facebook. He's asking about thoughts on Rocky and Walters as a quick way to finish upgrades. I actually want to leave Rocky for next week. We'll discuss him together with Boak and Gray and all that. But Walters, yeah, as a quick way to finish upgrades, is he a potential keeper? And really, Walters could even potentially wait for next week as a conversation topic, because his break-even's still really high. He had that injury-affected game where he's 17. His break-even's still 157. If you take that score of 17 out, he's averaging pretty close to the top six forwards. He'd be averaging about the 98, 97 mark, which is pretty great.
That's awesome.
And after this week, if he scores another 100, he'll be at about 400K. Great value.
Yeah. And the reason why we do need to just flag them at this point, Marcus, is that if you are thinking about getting Rocky and Walters into your team, this might not be the week to do it, but you do need to think about the fact that you will be bringing them in. Like, I'm upgrading my last midfield spot this week to Dangerfield, so that would make Rocky be a bench player, which means it's pretty hard to make that move, considering I'll still have rookies on field. And with Walters, a lot of people have just got Fritsch in their forward line, so you need to be thinking about who you might be bringing in that upgrade, because Fritsch would almost be a straight swap for Walters next week, potentially, though it'd be only about 40-50k in it. So look, Walters is definitely someone that I'd strongly consider. My main concern is that when he did his knee, he had his knee heavily strapped when he went into that game. So that just worries me that it might be a little bit more ongoing than we would like.
Yeah, I think for those looking at both Rocky and Walters next week, those individuals would be somewhat happy that Gray at least didn't have a huge game against Gold Coast up in China. He scored 67, so letting that percolate in price movements for a couple of weeks before you bring him in buy free for that stretch of three games, going to be okay as a strategic move. So something to consider next week for sure. Nick Freeling from Facebook's asked about a couple of other players who potentially present a lot of value as well. Tui, he is priced at 390K. He scored a 25 in round 6 against Sydney, and that caused his price to crash a fair bit. He already went up 30K off the back of a 122 against Essendon. He looks like a 90 averager, not like a top 6 defender, so I'm a little bit cold on him. But at 390, like, you cost 60K more from Finlayson. That's pretty good value.
Hawker, good mate of the podcast and someone that's been on them before, actually bought him in last week for 360,000 and got a 122, so that's massive. Worked really well for him. He also brought Zorko in for about 360 a couple of weeks ago as well, who's been killing it. The thing with Tui is, I think that you're right, that he's an 85-90 averager, not a sort of top six guy, so getting him at 390 is probably, it's close to a line ball. Like, it's still good, but it's not like ecstatic good. But getting him for 360 was awesome from Hawker. My concern is, like, so the Geelong defense is considerably different this year than it was last year, and I wonder whether Tui's going back to the career that he sort of forged 2-3 years ago, where he was a 75 averager for like a really large chunk of his career. And then it was only the last sort of 10 games at Carlton and the full season last year at Geelong that he's actually become like a ball handling good scorer. So I wonder whether he's taken a more defensive role or not.
Yeah, no, that's a good call. I think Thurlow reestablishing himself in the Geelong team would be a worry for Tui. And more importantly, the form of Tom Stewart, who a lot of people are sort of saying is a contender for, you know, the 40-man All-Australian list at the moment. He's definitely taking a lot of intercept marks and a lot of the ball outside of the 50. So, yeah, not super keen on him. Kennedy, though, I'm definitely tempted on. 366K is a great price point for a bloke who's capable of a 170 score. His break-even's 81 now, so he's basically bottomed out. They've got Hawthorn and St Kilda leading into the buys. Is he too risky, Mark?
Too risky for me, just because I'm not sure that he's fit.
Yeah, that is quite fair, Mark. He's only had the one game above 100. That was his first game back against Gold Coast. Since then, 29, 58, 65, 52, 88. Doesn't inspire confidence, but in order to cash in on great value, you often have to make the calls before they occur. And Kennedy has the runs in the ball on board in the past to potentially tempt individuals enough to do it. I'm not against that pick at that price.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 4 of the last 5 seasons, he's averaged over 90 and played most games as well. So, yeah, there's definitely the potential there that he could be one of those picks that could work out very, very well for your team.
All right, Mark, last question to wrap up the podcast with. This question's from Daniel Trigeagle on Facebook. How many available trades should we be comfortable with heading into the buy rounds? We tackled this on a Patreon-exclusive podcast a little while ago, and at that stage we said, calculate how many upgrades you have left, calculate how many trades it'll take to get you there, and then go, do I have more than 6, 7, 8 trades for injury? And if so, it's more than comfortable. And at that stage, we were still more than comfortable. Mark, you've got 4 upgrades left. How many trades do you have left, Mark?
18, I think.
18. So if it took a 1 down, 1 up to hit all those 4 targets, you'd still have 10 left for injuries.
And side swaps. 17 left.
17, you'd still have 9 left. So I'd say more than enough. At this stage, I would not be too concerned about trades. We are getting quite a few questions about how many trades we have left, so we're addressing it. But
So I think it's more the question is not how many going into the buys, but it's how many coming out of the buys. The buys are late this year. I'd like to have 6 coming out of the buys, which gives me my 4 upgrades plus 3 trades that I can sort of play around with a little bit. And that'd still give me my 6 coming out of the buys.
I don't know if I'm necessarily that sold on committing to, you know, 3 trades to side swaps just because it's up your sleeve. But I agree that 6 coming out of the buys in round 14 is more than comfortable for the last 9 rounds. That allows for 1 injury every game and a half.
Yep.
Every round and a half, sorry. All right, Mark, let's move on to the captain's corner and wrap up the show. We've got a few more VCC options this week on the table because Gold Coast and Port Adelaide are on the bye, which means that you can take a vice captain up till the second last round.
Although I have none of those players in my team.
Okay.
And all of my players should be playing this week, although that's not totally true because Mitch Crowden from Freo is likely to get dropped after 5 touches on the weekend, so that would give me an out. I am looking at Jackson McRae for the vice captain. Come on down, Jackson. And I'm so assuming that I will not need to have a captain after that.
I am in not such a fortunate position. I'd probably still go in with one of the two rucks as my VC. Grundy against the Bulldogs could look pretty good. They've struggled in the rucks most of the season, so I'll probably give the VC to Grundy and then give the captaincy to either Gorn against Adelaide or Mitchell against West Coast. So not as fortunate without McRae.
You're not going to put anything on McRae?
Glumly stare from the sidelines and...
Do you know who I think is a realistic option, though, this week is probably Danger.
Yeah.
Like, I would assume Carlton, that...
Yeah,
and Kerno would probably run with Selwood, you would think, or Ablett, maybe.
Yeah.
Kerno's not really going to go to Danger, would he?
Yeah, you wouldn't think so. Only concern is Danger's still playing out of the forward line.
Yeah. I think the thing that I like about Danger, which you can get pretty much the same thing from Gorn, is that he has, so far anyway, had a low basement. So, I mean, Mitchell's put in a couple of 70s, Pfeiffer's put in 70s, Dusty's put in 70s. There's not a lot of players out there that you can reliably bank on at least 100, which is like, I know that you're looking for the 150s from your captain because you're looking for like a big win, but I do like a low basement to my captains as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I reckon you go for the 150s with your vice. You go for a 110 basement, 100 basement if you can for your captain. Happy with a 115 sort of as a second option there. So a good call. All right. With that, Mark, I think that's going to wrap up the show. Just a shout out to our patrons again for their continued support across the season. We'll be doing bonus episodes throughout the bye series. So please, if you're considering supporting the show, keep that in mind. You'll get a little bit of bonus content as a patron over that bye period. Mark, anything to leave our listeners with? I'm assuming you're back and confident about Essendon. You'll smash GWS this week.
No. Definitely not feeling confident, mate. I just... really thankful and grateful that I got to go on the podcast this week, having Essendon having beaten Geelong, my Supercoach team having smashed yours. It's a good week to come on the show, mate.
All right. And with that, I'm going to wrap this up quick. See y'all next week.
See ya. Yeah.